Sadly, video game libraries were dealt a blow on copyright reform, making legal access to old games more difficult. Plus, if a AAA studio is closed before it releases a game, was it ever a AAA studio? Tonight is October 27th, 2024, and the Bobby Blackwell Show featuring your calls and chat comments is up next. So you would say even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game. I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
Breakman is here. We can start the show. Breakman told me this. Thank you. Who's ready for their weekly dose of hogwash? We have some. It's not as many, but it is. There's a lot of hogwash this week. Hello, everybody, and welcome to not a spooky edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on the Voice Geeks Network, thank you so much. We do try to tape the show live just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat. It is Twitch. But you know, we still like the Breakman. There will not be a show for me in 2 weeks. A much-needed vacation is coming up, and it will be in 2 weeks. So I will not be here in 2 weeks, which I believe is November 9th, I want to say. Maybe the 10th? I don't know. What is time? But it's going to be that weekend, whatever weekend that is. The Breakman is not far off in what he's saying. Anyway, that is for Twitch chat, not for the podcast. But there's not going to be a new show that week. We will be back the following week figuring out what hogwash happened while I was gone. November 10th is the Sunday. So there will be no – OLR will still be here on November 10th. I just won't be. So they'll actually start on time. It's going to be great. We're going to have a lot of fun. But yes, this is also a podcast, so you can also join our Discord server if you want to talk to us during the week or talk back if you can't be here on Sunday nights. VogNetwork.com/Discord gets you the invite into that. And you will see that people will recommend things and talk about things that we do talk about on the show. In fact, we were talking a little bit in the Discord about what happened here on Twitch earlier today. And I do kind of reference it in some of the text that's on the screen for the Twitch chat, because I have a little list of things we're going to be talking about, which you can see now on Blue Sky. I actually take a screenshot and like post it over to Blue Sky. So if you want a spoiler on what we're talking about, you can find that there. Today we had our, depending on how the election goes, and I'm not going to get into like actual politics, but this is a political type story. Depending on how the actual election goes, we might have just seen our first ever VPTuber today. Because one of the vice presidential nominees, one of the vice presidential candidates, Tim Walz, went on Twitch today to play Madden and then suddenly pulled out Crazy Taxi at the very end. And he made some crazy money, but not all that much. But it was kind of interesting because you could tell, I could tell at least, that this was somebody who last played Crazy Taxi about 20 years ago with a different controller. And he even kind of said this. So I actually think it was kind of authentic, but he did play one round of Crazy Taxi. He apparently had the Xbox re-release of it, so he was using an Xbox controller because he remarked that he had never played it with the Xbox controller and he didn't know how to do things. Like, he couldn't brake, and he didn't know how to go into reverse. But he knew enough that you could tell he knew what he was doing. He was just using a controller that he had probably never used for that game and probably never even played all that much except for Madden on it. And he was on with AOC, and AOC's like, had never heard of the game and was like, oh, you're amazing at this game. And all of us, they're like, you're supposed to stop. And he couldn't figure out how to stop. But he did explain it away that, like, he's used to the Dreamcast controller when he played it 20 years ago. I am not as good at Crazy Taxi today as I was 20 years ago, and I know how to use an Xbox controller. So, if depending on how the election goes, that might be the world's first VPTuber, and I like that joke. The Breakman asks, insinuating that he played the arcade or Dreamcast version. It was the Dreamcast. He specifically talked about how he had Dreamcast. It was like his first real... He even talked about like how he had it. It was one he bought himself. He actually went through the story of that because everybody heard, oh, he had a Dreamcast and it had to get taken away from him. And people were like, well, obviously an aide brought him Crazy Taxi or something. And he said, no, I brought it because my wife didn't want it in the house. So I brought it into the office and played Dreamcast Crazy Taxi in the office. I brought it because it was like his first real job. So he wanted the best console at the time. And that was the Dreamcast. So, that story actually came out a couple months ago because they were, you know, when he was first became the vice presidential nominee. They talked to like former coaches because he used to be a high school coach 25 years. When the Dreamcast came out, he was a high school football coach, like assistant coach. And they were talking about how he was playing a lot of Dreamcast. And then it came out, it was most likely Crazy Taxi was one of them. And he proved it to that. But he would absolutely get destroyed by real gamers like the Breakman, who was challenging him to different Dreamcast games. Because I didn't watch the Madden part of it. But I don't know if he did that well there either. I don't know. I skipped straight to the Crazy Taxi stuff. He did one run. He delivered one. He actually got one delivery. The other person ran out of time. And that was all he did. So I couldn't break in Crazy Taxi right now either, probably. So, you know, it's just like me for real. So we talked about that in the Discord server. And you can find that more at vognetwork.com/Discord. So let's go ahead and talk about there were two news stories I wanted to talk about. There was a third one that kind of happened that was kind of a follow up and like that was more explosive when it was first talked about. Maybe we'll get into it if I, you know, have time, maybe. The Verge reports the first cracks are starting to show in Netflix's push into gaming. First reported in Gamefile and reported by and confirmed by Netflix, the streaming company has quietly closed one of its studios, the first one in 3 years since the company began its foray into gaming. According to Gamefile, the shattered studio was known as Blue. Netflix is like red and everything, so that's kind of interesting. But in 2022, Netflix announced it hired former Overwatch executive producer Chaco Sonny to run the studio. Since then, Blue had brought on a number of game industry veterans with experience working on high-profile franchises including Halo and God of War. Reportedly, Blue was developing a multi-platform AAA game for an original IP, but was closed before the game could be announced or released. Netflix had released a steady stream of games on its platform since the beginning of its gaming experiment in 2021. Although it started with a small number of hyper-casual mobile games, Netflix's offerings have expanded to include mobile-exclusive ports of iconic games like Grand Theft Auto and Hades, its own internally developed exclusives like Cozy Grove, Camp Spirit, and Oxenfree 2 Lost Signals. Netflix also acquired or spun up a number of studios to support its gaming pipeline. The most recent additions were a mobile game studio in Helsinki, a new studio in Southern California, and Cozy Grove developer Spry Fox. But with the closure of Blue, Netflix's trend of expansion may be over, as well as its grander AAA ambitions. Fifth Dream says, you posted it in chat, so I'm going to repeat it, Fifth Dream. Ha ha! Hey, wait, I play their free solitaire game on the toilet all the time. I mean, what? Stop looking at me. The Breakman says, Netflix, get back in your lane. Stop canceling good shows before they find a chance to find viewers. That's true. But Netflix probably looked at Game Pass, and they were like, well, let's not let Game Pass be the only cloud gaming subscription service. We can do it. And they even did this with shows like they do have like interactive shows like the Black Mirror episode Bandersnatch is really a point and click adventure game. It just happened to be live action Black Mirror episode. The Breakman does say that he hopes that nobody's looking at you while you're playing solitaire, Fifth Dream. I really hope. And I do believe like Minecraft story mode is on there. So they've got like some of the, Telltale or Telltale-esque games on there. I haven't really completely looked. They do have a quiz show that's like live, and I'm like, is that, you know, it's I miss one versus 100 Xbox. That's actually what I'm saying, is I miss one versus 100. And Netflix has a quiz show that runs at specific times. I think it's more like the HQ trivia fad that was going around, because I don't think HQ trivia exists anymore. And there's a market there, but I don't know if AAA would have been the way to go, and I think Netflix figured that out. Now, was Blue a AAA studio? Well, we'll never know. We will never know what they were building. They brought in a whole bunch of industry legends, but as it turns out, you need more than just that. Unfortunately, just bringing in like the top people that know what they're doing, if you don't give them a team of competent people, they can't replicate the same thing. And I kind of know this a little bit from experience, where it's like you can put like a great person as your architect, but if all of your the people that are actually executing the work aren't as competent as your last team, then whatever you're putting out is not going to be as good as whatever your last team put out. And we've seen this over and over again in the gaming industry, where it's like, oh, this, you know, famed designer left the big AAA company, went to an indie studio, and their next game wasn't as good as you expected. It's because the talent all the way down wasn't as good. The talent at the top is great, but all the way down is not that great, and Netflix might not have wanted to spend the money on the quality talent that was executing. They were spending all the money on the talent at the top that was like dictating how things were going and managing everything and designing everything, but the people that actually have to do the work and do the building, if you skimp on them, you're not going to get a quality product. The Breakman says that the reverse is true as well, and that is true. You can have a lot of quality people who can build, but if you have terrible management and terrible designers, it's going to be crap. It's going to be terrible. But is, and that we see a lot of, where it's like there's these all these talented people and they can't get something out there that's good because of the people at the top making the decisions. So both ways are true. And what probably happened at Netflix is they got all the people at the top that were great and probably didn't invest in the actual technical aspects, the building aspects. And that might be where they were like, you know what, we better cut our losses. It's been 2 years. We don't even have anything announced. It's an original IP. And they've also realized that a lot of their original IP or the stuff they put out, they already cancel on their TV side. 2022, they were also still riding high from the streaming boom. And now it's kind of fallen because we're actually now, you know, we've been allowed to touch grass now for a while. We couldn't. For a couple of years, weren't allowed to go out and touch grass. So now we can go out and touch grass, and that means that we're spending less time watching Netflix, and we're spending less time on streaming services and things like that. So we will never have anything preserved from this. There will be no preservation. There will be no entry into any library. But if there were, it would still be difficult to get in and see it. And this is kind of the big story that I wanted to talk about this week. And this is it's a sad blow to video game preservation and video game study and video game critique, especially when you go back in time to video games that are older. It is not permanent. This is, but it is going to be the way it is for at least the next 3 years. Ars Technica reports that earlier this year, the video game archivists were asking for a legal DMCA exemption to share internet-accessible emulated versions of their physical game collections with researchers. This week, the U.S. Copyright Office announced once again that it was denying that request, forcing researchers to travel to far-flung locations and collections for access to the often rare physical copies of the games they're seeking. In announcing its decision, the Register of Copyrights for the Library of Congress sided with the Entertainment Software Association and others who argued that the proposed remote access could serve as a legal loophole for a free-to-access online arcade that could harm the market for classic gaming re-releases. This argument resonated with the Copyright Office, despite a Video Game History Foundation study that found 87% of those older game titles are currently out of print. They said, quote, while proponents are correct that some older games will not have a reissue market, they concede there is a healthy market for other reissued games and that the industry has been making greater concerted efforts to release games. Further, while the Register appreciates that proponents have suggested broad safeguards that could better deter recreational uses of video games in some cases, she believes that such requirements are not specific enough to conclude that they would prevent market harms, unquote. So this is the Copyright Office that was their ruling. A DMCA exemption for remote sharing already exists for non-video game computer software that is merely functional, as the Register notes, but the same fair use arguments that allow for the sharing don't apply to video games because they are, quote, often highly expressive in nature, unquote. In an odd footnote, this is wild right here. This is wild. The Register also notes that the emulation of classic game consoles, while not infringing in its own right... Are you ready for this hogwash? Are you ready for this hogwash? Listen to this. While not infringing in its own right, has been, quote, historically associated with piracy, thus raising a potential concern for any emulated remote access to library game catalogs, unquote. That footnote cites the Video Game History Foundation founder and director Frank Cifaldi's 2016 Game Developers Conference talk on the demonization of emulation and its importance to video game preservation. Essentially, in that talk, in that 2016 GDC talk, Frank Cifaldi, who's done great work, and the Video Game History Foundation, who's done great work, has said, basically, did a talk and said, this is why it's wrong to associate emulation with piracy, and said right now a lot of people associate emulation with piracy, and this is why that association shouldn't be made. The U.S. Copyright Office literally used that talk to say this talk states that emulation is associated with piracy, period. They used his own talk and said, well, this is how it is. And therefore, even if you think it shouldn't be that, you stated that emulation is associated with piracy, and so we are going to use that in our ruling. In fact, Cifaldi quipped in social media, quote, the moment I became the Joker is when someone in charge of copyright law watched my GDC talk about how it's wrong to associate emulation with piracy, and their takeaway was, emulation is associated with piracy, unquote. In a statement issued in response to the decision, the Video Game History Foundation called out, quote, lobbying efforts by rights holder groups that continue to hold back progress for researchers, unquote. The status quo limiting remote access, quote, forces researchers to explore extra legal methods to access the vast majority of out-of-print video games that are otherwise unavailable, unquote. NYU professor Lane Nooney argued to the Copyright Office earlier this year, quote, frankly, my colleagues in literary studies or film history have pretty routine and regular access to digitized versions of the things that they study. These travel impediments to access physical games are real and significant, and they do impede research in ways that are not equitable compared to our colleagues in other disciplines, unquote. Speaking to Ars Technica, Video Game History Foundation Library Director Phil Salvador said that the group was disappointed in the Copyright Office decision, but, quote, proud of the work we've done and the impact this process has had. The research we produced during this process has already helped justify everything from game re-releases to grants for researching video game history. Our fight this cycle has raised the level of discourse around game preservation, and we're going to keep that conversation moving from within the game industry, unquote. And then Cifaldi also said, quote, I'm proud of the work we and the orgs we partnered with did to try to change copyright law. We really gave it our all. I can't see what else we could have done. This fails the needs of citizens in favor of a weak sauce argument from the industry, and it's really disappointing, unquote. So this marks the fourth time the Copyright Office has rejected arguments for remote access to library game collections since 2015. The office will consider arguments for and against the exemption again in 2027 as part of its triennial rulemaking process. So this is the way it's going to be until 2027, and then we can try again, just like we've tried every 3 years since 2015. Tire Claw says, you know how we have a thing for film preservation? Perhaps we need something like this for video games. This was it. This was literally that. They were literally like, we want the same thing that you grant films. And the U.S. government said, that's not legal. That's literally what this is. That's literally what they're trying to do. As Sharon and Matt says, we'll get there eventually, an online library. I just hope we live long enough to make it happen. But yeah, like, here's the thing. We are getting to the point in the video game, in video games in general, that people who worked on the early video games aren't around anymore. And there's not a lot about them that is readily available. And so we do need to go and research, and we need the physical games to do that. And a lot of times when you have a grant, especially if you're doing a university thing, you don't have the budget to go fly to some place to work on the physical version of the game. Now, these libraries, it is legal for these libraries on premises to have a digital version. So they already have a way to preserve. And so because disc rot is real and cartridges failing and demagnetizing and blah, 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 all that's real. So in the library, they're allowed to use emulation in the library. This was trying to get them to be able to have a way that a researcher could check out a digital asset. They would be the only one to be able to check out the digital asset and view it without physically traveling to the physical location, wherever that is in the U.S. Tiger Claw says that they must preserve video games, otherwise it becomes lost media. Believe it or not, there are actually people in the entertainment industry that actually think having some lost media is a good thing. There are people that absolutely believe that there being lost media is a good thing. Questbuster says, as someone that uses emulation to research extremely old games like those from the early 80s and late 70s, I can't overstate the importance of emulation for hardware I don't have immediate or easy access to, like a Play-Doh mainframe. Now, the Breakman asks, how is it a good thing to have lost media? And unfortunately, I can't recite the arguments because I don't remember them. I just know that that's an argument they have made. It's something about, like, the keeping the mystique. Not everything needs to be examined. And, you know, sometimes things are better off just left in memory and not actually out there. There's actually sometimes an argument going on social media. About, then this is something about the video game industry and kind of going back to the, we can increasingly no longer actually ask the people who were there. So we have to now kind of study different things because the people that are there aren't around anymore. But there's always a, somebody will say something, and it's usually a younger person who wasn't around at the time either. So somebody who's probably born in the 90s, let's say, talking about how artists in the 80s drew everything respecting the scan lines, and that they never once intended for you to see the raw pixels ever in any video game ever. Every single artist only worked on CRT TVs that had the scan lines that blurred, that basically had dithered the pixels together, and so it was smoother. And not a single artist in the 80s ever thought about the actual pixels. Now, that's actually not true, but because we don't have a lot of these researchers to actually have this research done on this, they can say it's true and there's no arguments to the contrary. And they will even use pictures from people who know how things were done in the 80s, and they're like, well, no, this is just the way it was done before I was born. And whenever they're told that's not the way how it was done, they're like, well, you can't prove that. Because nobody's doing research in how artists actually did their art in the 80s. A lot of them did use graph paper, so they absolutely did see the pixels. There were computer monitors that did not have the same scan lines as your consumer TV did. Even arcade cabinets had CRTs that didn't have the scan lines the same way as your CRT did, so they still looked blocky, because there was a, it's usually younger people who are and not like super young. I'm talking like, you know, younger people that are probably in their 20s right now, 20s and 30s, are like, all this obsession with pixel art, that's not what it was like. We didn't see the pixels when, like, kids my age, we didn't see the pixels because we watched it on a TV with scan lines, and so we didn't see the pixels. And we absolutely did. And if you went to an arcade, you absolutely did. And the people, and not every artist had a CRT TV that they could put their art on to see the pixels. They were working on computer monitors. So a lot of the things that we see are genius, like the red eyes in Castlevania Symphony of the Night, were happy accidents. And, I mean, the Game Boy. Like, the Game Boy had an LCD screen, so there were no scan lines on there, and we absolutely saw the pixels. So the argument does fall apart, but because we don't have a lot of research in actual, like, academic research into this stuff, there's nothing proving them wrong. Fifth Dream says they want you to forget old games so they can pretend they just made it up and sell it again. I think it's more they don't want you knowing the details of it. Like, it existed, here's some pictures, but, you know, we don't actually want you to see the details of it. Now, Fifth Dream says, it blew my mind when I finally realized a lot of game graphics were meant to look better on CRT monitors. And they did. They absolutely looked better on CRT monitors, but they weren't designed specifically for... Not all of them were designed specifically for CRT monitors. Some artists absolutely knew how to, you know, manipulate the scan lines to make their art look a little bit better than it does if you look at the straight pixels. But it also, like, everybody's TV was different. Depending on what type of TV you had, the scan lines were different. So that's why a game looked crisper on a Sony Vega that weighed, you know, 3 tons, and you needed, you know, a group of like 60 people to move your 28-inch Vega versus a, you know, cheaper 20-inch screen that you bought for like $78 at Kmart in a blue light special. Because the interlacing was different. And Questwater says, speaking of graph paper, that reminded me that there was that document dump of design documents for Super Mario Brothers a while back that showed the game being planned out on graph paper. I mean, one thing to know about the old video games and how they were designed, TVs, so a computer monitor, I believe, and I'm trying to remember the order, but essentially, a computer monitor was 8x7. And a TV is 4x3. And a lot of times these games were designed for 8x7. That's when you see like actual resolution or actual size, like if you go into Nintendo Switch Online and you boot up like the NES or the SNES emulator, you'll see you could have it 16x9, 4x3, or actual size. Actual size is 8x7. And so what they would do is like the moon in Castlevania Symphony of the Night or the bubbles in Super Mario in Yoshi's Island. They look like ovals on your TV if you played it on a 4x3 TV, like a CRT TV like we had at home. They're intended to be perfect circles, and they are in an 8x7 ratio. So that's how you can kind of know that it was designed for a computer monitor that maybe didn't have all the same scan lines as your home TV, because they were designing everything to be a circle in an 8x7 environment and not in a 4x3 resolution. And Tiger Claw says, CRT monitors tend to have a higher resolution than a CRT TV. That is true. They absolutely were. S.J. Matt says, Jerry Lewis fought hard to not have one of his movies ever see the light of day. It ended up in the Library of Congress, but even that was an incomplete cut. And it was the day the clown cried. I mean, obviously, we see it now, like, you know, Lost Media. Hello, Batgirl. Hello, Coyote versus Acme. Hello, StarCraft Ghost, even though we did finally get that. But, like, there's a lot of those kind of Lost Media, and we're losing things all the time. You know, and usually a lot of times when we lose things, it is because of corporate greed or something like that. You know, we can talk about TV. There's still famously a lot of the lost episodes of Doctor Who, because the BBC reused the tapes that they filmed a lot of the early episodes on, and they've never found a couple of these episodes of Doctor Who from the 60s. They're just gone. Or we have, you know, and so all we have is we have the script. and somebody like did a tape record, an audio recording of the show from the TV, some fan, and then they actually wound up doing animation to basically animate. They had like some set photos and things like that. And they, so that's basically just corporate greed. They didn't want to spend the money to preserve it, and they wanted to reuse the tapes, so they did. I was shocked to learn that we still haven't turned every stone. Like, those lost episodes of Doctor Who especially might still be found. The problem is they're inaccessible places right now because it's a war zone, basically. It's kind of the way it was explained to me, is that they sent out a lot of the episodes for syndication, and that's where we found a lot of the old episodes. Like, you know, a station in Australia still had some tapes that had some lost episodes, and they were able to get those. They do believe that there are episodes in places like Myanmar, Burma, which we can't easily get into. North Korea might actually have some. We're not sure. But like Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, places like that, places researchers, especially from the UK, can't get into to get into their archives. So they actually believe there are some locked Doctor Who episodes that are available, that are still existing. They're just in places that people from the West can't get into. But anyway, back to video games. The research that can be done is paramount, and a lot of times you need to be able to actually delve into the media itself. You can't research a movie without watching the movie. You can do a lot of stuff, but you really should be watching the movie. And games, I don't believe, are any different. You should be able to play the game, and because you want to see the impact of the things that you find from other things. You may learn about how they designed the art for something and what they did, and you want to see it in action to see how what effect that had. You can find the cause reading design documents or whatever that you can do remotely, but without actually playing the game yourself, you won't see what the effect of those are. So this does not impede that a lot of this, because you can still do it. You just need a lot more money, because now you need to physically travel to a video game library at a university or at a third party or something like that, that does have exemptions. They are able to use emulators on site, but you can't do it from wherever you are. You actually have to physically travel, which is something that we used to have to do all the time. But now with the invention of the internet, if you want to check out a book, you can check out the ebook version or a scanned version. Our library has a lot of scanned version of things. You can look up scanned newspapers without actually going to the library to find the microfilm and put it under a microscope to read the old newspaper. There's been a digitization process. Now, I do know that the Video Game History Foundation and other libraries, because they're not the only one, there's multiple libraries in the U.S. that are trying to fight for this. They said, you know what, here's what we'll do. We'll have some safeguards. And some of the safeguards they were talking about were things like, if a company reissues the game, we will pull it. It will no longer be available in our library. We will not allow access to it if you have reissued the game online. I believe. I believe because of the historical significance, it would still be available in person. You can check it out, like a researcher can check out documents and stuff like that. It's a lot different than just using your public library. There's a little bit more into it, but they won't have it online available for you to play, a researcher to play online. And it's really the industry's argument is that word play. They have stated in the past, because I believe I might have covered this 3 years ago when this happened last time, and I believe the argument that the Entertainment Software Association has made is that we don't mind people researching. We mind people having fun. And if there is a chance that someone would have fun, that is something that goes against our company's interests. So that is kind of their argument. They are afraid that people are going to suddenly become video game researchers to have all of these free games where they can have fun. Breakman says, they hate fun? What is this, the town from Footloose? No, no, no. They don't hate fun. They just put fun behind a paywall, and you pay them. Because if you're going to have fun, they want your money. Research, fine. But if you have fun, you owe them money. Fifth Dream says, I know how to solve this. Grow a long beard, put on tiny spectacles, rub your chin, and go, every now and then while you play. In the next 3 years, you got to be in person. Luckily, those DMCA protections have not gone away, so they are still able to do things in person. And if you want to be a video game researcher, a legitimate one, please feel free to get thousands of dollars to get a grant, to get a research paper, and then fly to somewhere to go experience the game on their emulators, because they may not have the actual hardware, but they got the emulators. And Sharon Man asks, who is that company or artist that did those epic PC game covers in the 80s? I don't know. Like, they all had epic covers because they didn't want to put the actual pixels on the, unless they were Nintendo Black Box games, they didn't want to put the actual pixels on the front of the box. Because that also kills the whole CRT argument. They didn't mean to see the pixels. I'm like, have you not seen the cover of the black box of any of the Nintendo games from 1985 that had the big pixels in huge non-scanline letters? So we are going to take a quick music break and come back. And actually, because I am a little bit ahead of schedule, if you want to call in and you want to talk about game preservation or something else going on, feel free to join on our Discord server. Go into the Green Room voice chat channel, and I'll pull you into another channel. You can join during the music break, and then we can talk. We can actually talk. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show. You're in the Voice of Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork.
Hey, it's your friendly neighborhood Mexican, Act Deaf, and you're participating in the Bobby Blackwell Show. Whether he's right or wrong, his opinion is always something worth listening to. Except for the music critics. Those sometimes suck.
Happy birthday, Mike Deaf. That's right. I felt bad. I actually feel bad. I trolled him last week a little bit, and it actually, like, triggered, like, some introspection in him, and I'm sorry. So happy birthday, seriously. And the music break was great tonight. I know he felt that. But, you know, and don't feel bad for Mike Deft. It was Pokemon Go Community Day, and he apparently did actually catch the big Gigantamax, whatever. I don't play Pokemon Go, so I don't know what was going on. But apparently he caught a big one, so that's a great birthday present. So congratulations for that. They're doing these big events in Pokemon Go where, like, you need like 100 people or something to go be physically somewhere. So yeah, I could never. Pikmin Bloom thankfully doesn't had anything like that. Thankfully. So, so far, nobody's in the green room. I do want to mention, because I said at the beginning, I'm like, there was something else that I was going to talk about, and I didn't know if I was going to have the time, so I didn't want to put it in. But there was a quote from Larian, one of the Larian executives. They're the ones that made Baldur's Gate 3. Larian, director of publishing, Michael Dowse, and basically was like, about Ubisoft's strategy. And they basically said, if gamers need to get used to not owning games, developers must get used to not having jobs. And my initial reaction was, game developers are already used to not having jobs, because have you seen how many layoffs there are? But it kind of goes back to a comment that Ubisoft made a couple months ago. And I think we covered it on the show then. And they were also right then. It's like, unfortunately, everybody's right all the time on this stuff. And it's that gamers are going to get used to not owning their games very soon, which is why Ubisoft is trying to do their own Ubisoft Plus subscription service, which their games are on. And, you know, their new Prince of Persia actually reviewed really well, but they kept it behind a lot of their subscription services, and they didn't put them out where a lot of gamers were, so it underperformed. Whereas if it had been on Steam on day one, it probably would have been a great hit for them. But it wasn't. And it goes back to a comment that a Ubisoft executive made a couple months ago that gamers are soon going to get used to not owning their games. Because consumers are already used to not owning their music. When was the last time you bought an album? When was the last time you bought a CD? Now, sickos like me buy vinyl, so I can actually say this month. But most people are like, why would I want to buy an album when I have Spotify and it's right there? And I can listen to it wherever I want. We're used to not owning our movies. When was the last time you bought a movie? Unless you're a sicko like me who buys UHD 4K Blu-rays of movies that he really likes. When was the last time you bought a movie? I mean, unless you bought the VHS version of Alien Resurrection or whatever. They're actually, like, they're doing, like, special issue VHS tapes of some, like, current movies, which I think is fantastic. I just wish it wasn't always horror movies, because I would totally get a VHS. Like, if they put Deadpool and Wolverine out on VHS, yes, I absolutely would buy that. But they're not. It's all, like, horror movies and stuff like that. But we're used to the fact that we don't buy movies. We just wait for it to come out on a streaming service, and we go watch it there, and we don't need to own it. And then it can go away, and that's fine, because we watched it. Gamers are going to get used to not owning their games. It's taking us a little bit longer, but I think part of that's because games are typically a much larger purchase than a CD was. A CD was maybe at its most $15. Maybe there were some $20 ones. Most of the ones I bought were $10 when I was of prime CD buying age. And games are $60 or $70. And we kind of bristle at the fact that we don't own this game that has a value of $70. Tiger Claw says, some of us do, some, that this is the key word in Tiger Claw's thing, some of us do buy the physical versions of movies because the quality better, and we built our own server to preserve those movies. And yes, some do, but the problem with the word some is that implies it's the minority. The majority of people who enjoy movies are just fine with the fact that they no longer have to buy movies. They just have their Netflix subscription or their Hulu subscription or their Disney Plus subscription or their Max subscription or any of these other like 10 different places where you can get a subscription to see the movie. They are totally fine with that. And I've even heard that sometimes in our chat room we'll have somebody come in who's like, no, get rid of all physical games. I don't want a physical game. I want it all digital. I want everything digital. I don't want to have to pay for another game. Give me my subscription. Give me my games. It's more convenient for me as the consumer. And that, frankly, is the majority for TV and movies. Did you know that, like, it is now extremely difficult to preserve a television show that you, like, let's say you have a service that gets you the linear TV channels, like cable channel. Like, let's say you have cable. You may not have cable, but you may have a service like YouTube TV or Fubo or Hulu Live TV that gives you the linear cable channel, linear television channels, right? It is next to impossible to preserve that. I recently had to finally abandon my TiVos. I actually had literal branded TiVos, and I had cable. And my TiVos had hard drives in the TiVo, and that if my cable was out, I could watch one of the shows that I had previously recorded, and I could skip the commercials, and nothing bad happened to them. That no longer exists easily. There are ways to do it, and some people are able to do it. But you can, if you have a DVR with, let's go with Xfinity, they delete your recordings after a year. if you have Fubo, they're stored on Fubo, but if you cancel your Fubo subscription, you've lost those recordings. You have no way of transferring that recording off to something that's not hidden behind DRM. And a lot of times they don't even record the thing that actually aired. They, like Fubo especially, that's what I have right now because I watch sports. And what happened, I had to abandon my TiVos for Xfinity because turns out there was a regulation from like 2008, 2010, something like that, that required cable companies to support third-party devices using a standard called cable card. Well, in 2018, there was a big push to remove a lot of onerous regulations, and that was one of the ones that was removed. And they upgraded my network in my area to give more features. And one of the things they did is made it so one-directional cable cards no longer worked, which meant that my TiVos were no longer compatible with the Xfinity network because there's no regulation forcing them to support them. And so I had to drop cable because I looked and I'm like, I could get, you know, X1, Xfinity X1 for cable, or I could get Fubo or something, and I chose Fubo temporarily. But now I don't have any local recordings of anything, and I can't preserve them. Fubo at least does not take anything away after a year, but it's not as good of a... I can't, like, set my own, like, times to record. I'm like, record this show, and it's like, ha-ha, I decided not to record that airing. I recorded a different airing or something like that. It's actually easier to watch television from the 80s because people have recorded those on VHS and they still work today than it is to watch something that aired 2 years ago. You want to talk about lost media? Talk about all the TV that we can't record and we can't preserve because we don't have a way to preserve it. You want to talk about lost media? Try to watch something that was not a big thing. Try to watch some news, like a news report from 2 years ago. You can't. It's gone. Nobody recorded it because it's gone. I have tapes that my parents recorded that happened to have part of a newscast, a local newscast, because it aired, you know, they started the recording 5 minutes before their show. So the last 5 minutes of the newscast are there, or, you know, they record a little bit late. And so the late 11 o'clock news, the beginning of it was on the tape. So I could actually figure out what day we recorded whatever made for TV movie. That's there. If I wanted to watch a local news broadcast from 2 years ago, I can't. It's gone. Even if I had tried to record it, it would be gone. And, you know, I know that, you know, this X1 Xfinity actually, you know, they delete your recordings after a year. And there were some people that were like, I had a recording of my son on the news and you deleted it. That news story's not anywhere else, but on that one person's X1 account. And Xfinity's like, sorry, we remove your recordings after a year. It's gone now. And normal people don't have a way of moving their recordings over to something local. Some people do. Like Tiger Claw, I'm sure, would know exactly how to do it. But most people don't. Tiger Claw says, this week, as of October 24th, Comcast will no longer offer new cable cards to new or existing customers, but will continue to support the existing ones. And unfortunately, that means, like, TiVo is gone. Like, that's the final nail in the coffin for TiVo. I talked a little bit longer on that than I probably should have. I apologize. This is a video game podcast, and I got on my soapbox about that. Coming up next on the Voice of Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork is Orange Lounge Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California. They talk about games for much, much longer than I do, and we like to check in with them when I'm not talking about TV or recording TV. Sacramento, are you there?
I'm here, Bobby. How are you?
I'm doing better now. I got some things off my chest. But how are you doing?
A little vent session.
I know.
I'm good. I was hosting shows over the weekend, so I got to vent in front of a large crowd. So
there
it works
you go.
Out.
Yeah. I didn't get that this weekend. Oh, we play board games this weekend. So
could be a bit of a therapy, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when Cards Against Humanity came out at the very end. And you know. Yeah. Yeah. I was horrible enough to get a couple black cards in that. So, game preservation. Like, I'm sure you saw the stuff about the video game, the libraries and the copyright office.
Oh, yeah. You know what's on our list, too.
Yeah. So what are your kind of immediate takeaways from it, or hints on what you're going to say?
I mean, it just goes to show like how out of touch I think the government is with reality. And I think the best comparison that's come up is that the film library and the film association is able to do this. Why aren't games? It makes no sense at all. It's a completely different logic that's being applied. And, you know, the fact that, you know, they cited this game talk that was a completely different interpretation just like shows the total fact that they really didn't do their homework. And it's very frustrating. On the end of the government to continue this. I mean,
No. They did their homework. They watched Frank Cifaldi's talk of him saying
wrong and didn't listen to what he was saying.
Yeah. He said some words and they're like, boom, there's our quote.
That's like the film critic that gets the part where they were like, well, the special effects were great. And then the thing on the back of the box is great.
Yeah,
by the movie critic, mm-hmm. right? Like it's that whole line of thinking. And it's just all it's going to do, Bobby, is it's just going to make it. It's ironic because all this does, it makes piracy bigger, because when these researchers want to find these things and if they don't have a place to go or a legal channel to do it, what are they going to turn to? Piracy. These decisions are not going to make piracy go away. Piracy is here to stay. So the correct way to deal with it is to find a legal way to make it more available and out there, and the piracy will reduce significantly. Mm-hmm. Case and point. iTunes.
Yep.
Killed Napster.
Yep.
Killed LimeWire.
Yep.
Killed that shit. Sorry, Bobby. It killed that stuff because it made it very, I'm very passionate about this, obviously.
I know. Yeah.
It made it very hard to, you know, in those systems, it was very hard to find the legitimate thing. But when iTunes came out and you were able to log into a store, get a very good quality rip of the song that you knew was going to be the song with no issues, and you could burn that song to your very own mix CD a reasonable amount of times. I think iTunes lets you burn originally, it's probably changed a lot since 2000. But I used to use this. I used to be the Napster kid that switched to iTunes when it came out.
Yeah.
And I burned I think you could burn up to 5 CDs of the same track list. So that way you're not like burning an album, you know what I mean? But that helped nullify piracy. Did it make piracy go away? No, of course not. But do most people go to piracy at this point? I would argue no, at least in this country. Maybe in configurations in other places, it's different. And then of course people want to pick, you know, or want to say about like, well, Spotify doesn't really pay artists and all these streaming services have really screwed it up and now things are back to piracy. Go back to that point in time when iTunes first came out and how that just absolutely killed Napster. When did Napster die? When iTunes came out.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. And so that's just why this is just shocking that, you know, the government is basically going to be enabling piracy for another 3 years through this.
And essentially the way you kill piracy kind of in a more general sense is offer a better service than the pirates do. And that's what iTunes did.
Mm.
And for a time, that's what Steam did.
Mm-hmm.
Because PC's piracy went down initially. Now I'm not going to say it's this far down because now of all the DRM and all that stuff. But, you know, and then there's always the question of if you don't own a game, is it really stealing if you pirate it?
Yeah.
So, but at least the DMCA protections for those who can go to the physical library, because all of these things are physical artifacts that these libraries have, those DMCA protections are still in place. You can still emulate those, and it is there. It's just the barrier to entry is the flight and the hotel and the lodging to be there physically if you are doing your research paper as a broke grad student.
You hit the nail on the head. Yeah. And if you are a student, you have none of those things.
Yeah. And that's really what this is targeting, is research, like grad student research and papers and stuff like that. And this is the barrier to entry for them.
Yeah.
Because I think they were even saying like they're going to have it like where only one person can check it out at a time. So it's not like, you know, 500 of us can play E.T. for the Atari 2600 at once. No, one person can check it out and play it online. Just like and so nobody local could play that. Or, you know, experience that. Like, they were going to curate it like that. And they were, and even the government's like, hey, a lot of the stuff you said is great. It's just not great enough.
Yeah. You know, And I'm not going to apologize for using emulation in a lot of what I do, in a lot of remembering old games and things like that, because that is, you know, unfortunately, in many ways, what is most accessible right now. It's ironic because you opened the show talking about, you know, the Harris Walls Twitch channel, or no, it was AOC's Twitch channel, sorry. But obviously, Harris Walls' presence on Twitch and how Walls did the Dreamcast or the Xbox play of the Dreamcast game, right? Yeah. It's ironic because the only way he was able to do that is because Sega is probably easily in the top five companies that are very good about preserving their old game library.
Yes.
It is very easy to play old Sega games. They re-release them all of the time, even put them in other games. Sega may be on top, quite honestly. They're one of the top companies when it comes to preserving their game library. Now imagine how else would that have been done if Sega didn't do that. What if the game that Tim Walls fondly remembered was the Guardian Legend?
Yeah.
What would have been his way to play that on stream? There would have been no other way but emulation. Because that game, you can't legally get a copy of it.
Yeah.
There's no way to get it.
What else are you going to be talking about on Orange Lounge Radio tonight?
Oh, gosh. Well, there was other things that happened in the news as well. Oh, in fact, can you believe that this game is still in development, Beyond Good and Evil 2. We have an update that, yes, it's still in development. I think now it probably has a longer cycle than Duke Nukem Forever at this point. I'm not sure. I have to do the math, and I'm not good at math. And we will talk about the big Nintendo mystery project. Remember the big mystery project that was behind the NDAs? And we said, how long is that NDA going to hold up? And it turns out negative. Before it went live, all the information came out because people data mined it.
And it's a VR super console called the Super Switch, and it's a
but it's one of those things. When I first read it, I was like, okay, it sounds kind of cheesy. And then when I read it again, I was like, oh, I see why Nintendo's doing this. And I'll leave you with that teaser.
Orange Lounge Radio is up next. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thanks as always, Bobby. Sorry for the S-bomb.
It's okay. It's just the one. It's just the one. And, you know, so we still have a PG-13 rating. Thank you so much. Orange Lounge Radio is up next. That is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here at the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us. Interact with the show directly. I will not be here in 2 weeks on November 10th. I will not be here. OLR will still be here. So they'll actually get to start on time, unlike late, like they did tonight. But I do want to say, you can also find me on social media. I am at Bobby Black Wolf on Blue Sky, or at BobbyBlackWolf.com on Blue Sky, so you can find me there. I'm also at Bobby Black Wolf on other places as well. Hey, if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who doesn't know about it yet, but we would not be able to make this live show work without the help of the chatters who go above and beyond. Thank you so much, SSJ100 Matt, for resubscribing, and Tiger Claw for resubscribing to our Twitch channel. Thank you so much for supporting us for way longer than the 61 and 63 months that Twitch says that is. Our Twitch anniversary is coming up, like, in 2 months. It's coming up in December. I think our affiliate anniversary is January. But I think our actual Twitch anniversary is in December, so I'm going to go ahead and hit the button, and we're going to get out of here, and we'll preserve this episode, and so you can listen to it later anywhere you are in the world, and I'll see you next week. Don't forget to break in Crazy Taxi if you try to play it. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Black Wolf Studios.